Great. So the next session is the end of Jaipur is nearing. So welcome to this first session of the break and lunch. Hopefully you didn't eat too much and you're awake and ready for the session. To present this topic today is Cecile. So I'm going to give a quick bio and a bit about the talk. So Cecile is the senior manager in the financial services advisory team at Deloitte. Prior to joining Deloitte, she worked at her mutuals in specialized finance in various roles, including head of asset and liability management. She's currently the subject matter expert on reference rate reform at Deloitte and sits on a number of SRB MPG working groups to support the transition away from Jaipur. Now, this is not a traditional actual topic, but Cecile did present to us at the LAC, and I can definitely say it was interesting, enlightening, and I never knew where this will affect our lives in so many places. So I hope you enjoy it just as much as we did. So over to Cecile.
Okay. All right. Okay, so I like to walk around, so I hope you guys don't mind. I remember the first time when I mentioned the Jaipur reform to one of my actuarial directors, and he said to me, but Jaipur is a three-month rate. Why would the insurers care about that? They don't get out of bed for anything less than a 10-year duration project. And I said to him, look, I mean, that may be the case if all that we did was write insurance products and forget about it. But we don't do that. We hedge those insurance products. We take our premiums and our profits and we invest those in a range of financial instruments to earn a return. We use swap rates and curves in various models in your businesses. So Jaipur is really, it's like salt. It's in everything. It's embedded in our financial markets. And if you work in financial markets, it's something that you guys need to be aware of and understand some of the events that are going to happen over the next 2 years. So there we go. First couple of points, things change all the time. Why is this difficult? The first point is around fallback language. So all of the financial contracts that I've just mentioned, they have clauses that deal with a temporary cessation in Jaipur. It was never intended for Jaipur to end completely. They're written for a few days where Jaipur might not be published. So all of those contracts will have to be modified and potentially repapered, which is a huge exercise in the market. The second one has to do with the credit spreads. Jaipur is a term rate, so Jaipur has a liquidity and a credit premium embedded in the rate. The replacement rates are RONIA, which I'll speak about a little bit more now. That's an overnight rate, so it's considered near risk-free. And I will also speak about the concept of having a near risk-free rate in our market coming soon and what that means for risk-free curves. The point around that is they're economically not the same. They're not the same rate. You can't take the one out and replace it with the other one. It's just not the same number. So there's an economic impact when you replace the one with your ZARONIA rate. The last one is a structural issue. Jaipur is a forward-looking rate. If you go onto the Saab website now, you look at Jaipur, it tells you what your rate is going to be over the forward-looking 3 months. So RONIA is a backward-looking rate. So structurally, there's a very big difference between the two. You cannot just take the one out and replace it with the other one. Your systems cannot just take the one rate and change to a new one. So there's a lot of practical implications that you need to be aware of. The Saab, our Reserve Bank, they have constituted a market practitioners group. This is a very broad representation of people from banks, insurers, ASISAs there, and they all sit on these multiple work streams to try and manage this transition that's going to play out over the next 2 years in our market. And I've listed all of the sub-working groups there so that you guys have an appreciation of all of the elements and why this is so complex. So we have working groups for the cash markets, we have it for transition and coordination, data collection infrastructure, governance is a big one, communications, that's always a theme in everything. Derivatives has its own work stream as well. We have a very, very big Jaipur-based derivatives market that will need to be managed. Legal, I've spoken about those contracts that will be need to be repapered, and accounting and tax. And there's a lot of meetings happening in the industry, and the Saab is looking at this very closely and making sure that the transition is on track. And I'll speak a little bit later, and I'll show you guys a timeline and just speak about the detail of what's happening there. All right, the impact on insurers, that's you guys. And there's quite a few bullets. The first one is on the hedging programs. And a number of our insurers hedge their liabilities and their interest rate risk with derivatives. These derivatives at the moment are all JIBAR based. We have large swap portfolios. We have a huge FRA market. All of these instruments will need to transition to the new rate. And when you transition those instruments, because we typically manage very large, chunky liabilities, you have to transition the entire swap book with the liability. And if you don't do that properly, you're going to pick up a lot of gap and basis risk. So if you don't have a transition program and you have a hedging program, you really need to start looking at putting those things in place. A very important thing also to watch out for when you do that, your fixed rate spread is going to change. These swaps are typically extremely long dated. And when that changes, there are convexity implications. So the asset and liability management teams will need to be very careful and make sure that they don't just take the one portfolio of swaps, replace it with a new type of swap. You're going to have to do some additional delta rebalancing to manage that convexity risk. So it's going to be quite an exercise. Also bear in mind, the entire market is going through this transition. It's not just one organization, it's not just one part of the market. So you have to make sure that when you transition those contracts, firstly, that the liquidity in the market is there, and secondly, that you're not crowding the market and actually moving the price of these instruments against you. So it's an incredibly complex thing to move all of those large portfolios of swaps over to a new benchmark rate. Intragroup funding. Many insurers have multiple divisions and business units, and they move money around from one entity to the other. And almost all of the instruments that I've ever seen are priced as JIBAR plus some spread. So if you don't want to be picking up economic effects in one business entity versus another one, you have to ensure that those funding, those FTP instruments, are repriced in an economically equivalent manner. If you just replace them with the new rate, there are spread implications, and you're going to sit with P&L from the one entity and that's not moving to the other entity. So very important to consider that. On the financial reporting side, I mean, this is probably more for the accountants. There are many disclosures that need to be managed. When you have a transition program, you're going to be expected to report on how that is going, how you're managing the risks, what your exposures are. All of those things will need to be disclosed. And hedge accounting is a very important one, and they have published reliefs that will allow you to change your hedge accounting instruments from one basis to another. But there are restrictions and rules and limitations in terms of how you can do it. So you're not allowed to pollute any second-order effects in there. If it's purely transitioning from one reference rate to another, that is allowed, but you still need to watch out for your hedge efficiency ratios and all of those other elements around hedge accounting things. So there's allowances, but you need to understand what the implications are for their hedge accounting and tread very carefully when you do use hedge accounting and derivative instruments for that. A very important one, and it's called risk management, but it's actually much broader than that, because we are going to get a whole new swap curve in our market. Our swap curve at the moment references JIBAR swaps. Many companies bootstrap their own curves. A lot of people use the published JSE curve. All of those swap curves use three-month JIBAR swaps as underlying instruments when they bootstrap the curve. So that is now going away. We're going to have an OIS curve. That's an overnight indexed swap curve. And what that means is the derivatives that are used to bootstrap that curve will have a floating zirconia overnight radius underlying. And in the next slide, I'll show you why zirconia is considered a near risk-free rate. So we're going to have a risk-free swap curve, essentially, is the implications. That has much broader implications, and I want people to think about what that means for reporting, solvency, capital, all of those types of things. Risk limits, if you have risk limits that were calculated based on swap curve movements, those need to be reassessed. Model calibrations, if you've calibrated your models based on swap rates or curves or things like that, VAR numbers, all of those things. It might not be a big change, but you will have to go and look at it again and see whether it makes sense and see whether you need to make adjustments. So there's those things to consider, and also pricing models across the business. Your floating rate note instrument pricing models, really, I mean, this sits everywhere. So wherever swap rates or swap curves are used for pricing, that will have to change. So I know you guys are mostly focused on the liabilities, but cash is invested. Investments, assets, a lot of people place their cash in money market deposits, many, many different types of investments, credits investments, all of those things are priced at JIBAR plus some spread. And a lot of the collective investment schemes, particularly the ones that have the short-term cash benchmarks, they all reference STEFI as a benchmark. STEFI has JIBAR as an input, and that will also change. So that whole benchmark referencing process will also be changing at some point. And then bilateral loan agreements, that's, I suppose, also more in the banking space. If you have loans on the books, project finance deals, all of those types of things, those will typically have to be negotiated bilaterally between the one counterparty and the other one. And then the last one, systems and computation. The fact that zirconia is backward-looking has very big implications for how your systems calculate interest payments. It's not a find-and-replace exercise. It's a structural difference. So the systems will have to be assessed, and you can see if they can accommodate this, and if not, then they will have to be rebuilt. And that takes very long, because systems people generally want to test and dev and debug. So you have to start with this exercise fairly soon if there's system development that is going to be needed. And then also just to mention a shout-out for the embedded guarantees, because those have very complex and large Monte Carlo simulations, often using a swap curve. You're not going to have three-month simulations now. You're going to have to simulate a daily rate. So the computational intensity is quite significant. Okay, zirconia. What is it? A lot of people have said to me today they can't pronounce it. They don't know what to call it. It comes from SONIA, which is the UK rate, Sterling Overnight Index Average. We have ZAR, so that's what it stands for. That's going to be our new rate. The slide is quite detailed, but what I want you to take away from this slide is zirconia is a traded rate. And that was a very big criteria for the new rate. It has to be IOSCO compliant, and that means that it has to be based on a deep and liquid market of transactions. Zirconia is that. Zirconia is the overnight call deposits that all of our corporates and insurers and people place with the banks on overnight. And they do that to earn a bit of a spread pickup. And it's a huge market. It's a 350 billion rand market every day. So there's a lot of transactions that underpins this rate. So box ticked. And what the Saab then does is they will collate all of that trade information. They do their stats, chop off the top 10% and bottom percent, take the median, and then they publish that rate the next day. There's a publication lag on zirconia as well. And it might seem a small impact, but this has very big practical implications for many people. JIBAR, it's now 20 past 2. If I go into the Saab website right now, I'm going to see the JIBAR rate for 14th of May today. That will not be available for zirconia. That will only be available tomorrow morning. So that's a practical difference that you need to account for. And I've spoken about this, but the fact that zirconia is based on overnight transactions, that means that it's considered a not completely risk-free rate, it's not a collateralized rate, but it's a near risk-free rate because it's such a short term, such a very short duration. So that's why they call Zaronia a near risk-free rate. Okay. The most important differences, JIBAR, based on indicative submissions from the banks. There's five banks that are polled every morning, and they create the JIBAR rate. And you guys will remember, that's where this all started, is LIBOR had the same approach, big scandal. They were colluding and rigging the rate, so that's why we went on this whole journey. Zaronia, as I've just said, is underpinned by actual trades, so it cannot be manipulated. JIBAR has a very small selection of bank contributors. Only the big five banks contribute towards the JIBAR rates. Zaronia, the entire market transactions underpin Zaronia rates. So it's a much broader range of market participants. JIBAR looks forward and it sets in advance. So if I have to make an interest rate payment based on JIBAR in 3 months' time, I know what that amount is going to be today. But you don't know it for Zaronia. Zaronia, you only know at the end of the period. So a lot of people have complained, a lot of particularly the corporates, because how are they supposed to do their projection and their cash flow management and all of those things? So it has severe practical implications. The quote conventions is, and Zaronia is a backward-looking rate and it's fixed in arrears. So what will happen is if I look back 3 months, you will have all of those little daily rates and you compound them. And that's going to be your three-month rate now. But you look backwards in time and you only know what it is towards the end of the period. The quote convention, that comes in the next slide, but JIBAR has a very simple quote convention. It's basically 1 month, 3 months, or 6 months. That's as difficult as it gets. There are many variables that make up the Zaronia convention. I'll show you guys what they look like now. And then the last point at the bottom there is just to reiterate that JIBAR has a liquidity and a credit spread embedded in the rate. Zaronia does not have that. Okay. Busy slide. All that you have to remember is words like look back period, observation shift. These are going to be important terms. You have to understand what they mean. They're going to be as important as business day convention. Everybody knows what that means. You don't know what look back period means yet. And the people who work with Zaronia will have to learn what these elements mean. Practically, the difference is just to manage the fact that you can't know what your Zaronia rate is towards the end of the period. So what they do is they shift the observation period back a few days. So that's why they have that. The important takeaway is there are new words and phrases that you will have to use when you work with this rate and when you work with the instruments. And I've mentioned that Zaronia will have the publication lag. That is very important also to remember. Okay. So what the world and the UK and the US have realized when they went through their transition is that there are many, 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 many derivative contracts that will all need to transition. And to renegotiate all of those contracts on a bilateral basis is humanly impossible. So they needed to come up with something to transition large volumes of contracts over to the new reference rate. And what they've done, they went with a very, very complicated approach. They looked at the differences between their IBOR rates and their overnight rates. They looked at a five-year period, and they took the median of the daily differences, and they fixed that spread. And it was as simple as that. And they purposefully went with a very simple approach. And you can see there's a table that's quite small, but the point is Bloomberg published those rates, and it is fixed. It doesn't change. So if you have an instrument that is affected by this fallback process, and those rates are fixed, that is the rate until the instrument matures. There is no there's no scope for changing it or renegotiating it at a later stage. That's a very long time for a 30-year swap to be stuck into a single fixed rate. In South Africa, we are currently investigating, the SARB is investigating what to do in our market. They want to take a similar approach. You can see there on the graph, The left-hand side, JIBAR, is the light blue line. We expect it to be higher, of course, because of that credits and liquidity premium. ZARONIA is the dark blue line, and then the red line is the spread difference between the two. You can see it was quite high, and then this year it's been a little bit lower. And the histogram on the right-hand side says if we took the median, that would be 36 basis points. But there's a problem in our market because in 2022, the SARB implemented a change in their monetary policy implementation framework. And what that means was before that change, there was a liquidity shortfall in our market. So banks would borrow money from the SARB at a certain rate, and that was how they transmitted their monetary policy into the market. In 2022, that changed. They went to a surplus system. So now banks could take surplus cash and invest that with the SARB at a certain rate. It's subtle, but it's a huge change in our market, and it has very big implications for our price of short-term liquidity. So what the problem is right now is, given that structural shift, we cannot go and just apply a median to 5 years of history. There's a statistical issue with taking that approach. So the SARB is busy trying to figure out what to do in our market. And I raise this because that spread is an incredibly important number, and if you have a lot of instruments and you sign up to that fallback protocol and that fixed spread takes effect, if you are typically a receiver or a payer, if you're a payer of floating rates, you don't want to pay a higher rate. So if the spread is higher than what you think is the fair rate at the time, there's a real economic impact to what that number is. And if you have a very big swap book, that can have a very real P&L effect on your portfolio. I mention it now. They are going to start a working group that looks at this. They are going to publish documents to outline the thinking. But it's an interesting problem, and it's a number that is going to have a very big impact on our market. So watch this space. Right, the SARB timelines. Even though it's 2024 now, they've started already in 2018, so it's been a long time coming. The ZARONIA rates were first published in 2022, and if you go onto the SARB website now, you can pick up quite a long history of what this rate has been doing. It's been quite stable. It hasn't been very volatile, which is what we want. Last year, a lot of the market convention documents came out, so there is technical reading available for the technically inclined amongst you, or send it to the teams that want. This year, the focus is on liquidity. The banks have started with their test trade runs. They've done two rounds. They've confirmed that they can price it. If you go onto Bloomberg right now, you will see screen pricing for the new ZARONIA derivatives being shown. But we don't have the liquidity yet. We don't have these things trading in big size. And that is the key outcome that we're looking for over the next couple of months. A very big requirement for that is the international clearing houses. LCH is one of the biggest ones. They've confirmed that they will start trading and clearing ZARONIA swaps in July this year. So that is very exciting news, and we really expect to see a lot of liquidity in these derivatives pick up over the next couple of months. And that is important because towards the end of the year, they're looking to start implementing what they call ZARONIA first. What that means, if you call a bank and you ask for a price, they're going to give you a ZARONIA derivatives price. It's going to be the default. It doesn't mean that you can't trade JIBAR anymore. Okay? Next year, you can still trade JIBAR, but what's going to happen in our market is you're going to have a situation where there's a lot of liquidity in JIBAR and very little liquidity in ZARONIA. But as time goes by and as that moves, that it's like a seesaw. It will tip, and the liquidity will move to the ZARONIA derivatives, and that's probably going to happen towards the end of next year. And you don't want to have to move contracts when there's no liquidity left in the market. So make sure that your transition programs happen at the right time. I've spoken a lot about derivatives. The cash market is hugely important. The loans, the money markets, the floating rate notes, all of those instruments, they also use JIBAR. What we've seen overseas and also in our local markets, JIBAR, the derivatives tend to move first. They build the liquidity, and then the cash market follows a bit later. And that's definitely what you're seeing in the timelines as well. Saronia first with a cash market is only going to be beginning of next year. And then towards the end of next year, that's when a lot of the active transition is going to be. You're going to see a lot of these things move over from the old benchmark to the new one. And also, the SARB hasn't announced that final date. If you've watched the US market, they announced on the 30th of June was the cessation date for US LIBOR. We don't know exactly what our date is going to be. The SARB does that on purpose, because the moment that you anchor it, then people start taking on positions and doing all of those related things. So they haven't announced it yet. They have said that they will announce it at the end of 2025. So very exciting date. And then beginning of 2026, no new JIBAR contracts. If you're trading a new instrument, it has to be Zaronia-based. So by that point, all of your capabilities, your systems, your people, your teams, everything must be on board for the new rate. And then at the end of 2026, that is it. JIBAR cessation, and they are also looking at drafting, they call it tough legacy legislation, and what it means is it's laws that penalizes you if you're still exposed. Practically, if you want to trade JIBAR beyond 2026, the rate won't exist, it won't be published. So you can go onto the SARB website, you go into the systems, it's not going to be there. So everybody really should have moved everything over by the end of 2026. And it looks like a long time, but if you consider the complexity of the transition, the number of people involved, the systems, the understanding, it really is a lot that still needs to be done. And my last slide. So these are a few success factors that I think will be helpful in the organizations. Good planning. Very difficult right now to start actively moving things because the liquidity isn't there. There's a lot of uncertainty still in the market. A lot of the legal clauses haven't been published. So there's still a lot of things up in the air. But you can start planning. And you can start looking at your business and saying, where am I exposed to JIBAR? And don't just look at the obvious stuff it hides. Data. Data is such an important tool. If you can use your data to extract your exposures, where you're exposed, data is also something that takes long to clean up. You don't want to be spending time on data towards the end of 2025. That's not when you do your data work. That's when you start trading contracts. Technology is very powerful. One of the applications here is in the legal space, contract automation, redrafting some of the clauses. One of the benefits that we have is we have Gen AI capability now that is much more advanced than when the US did their transition. So we have technology now and we can use it for our transition. It's actually sometimes pays to be a little bit late in the game. The people is important. This is a technically challenging topic for many people, maybe not for the actuaries, but for a lot of the support teams, they struggle to understand this. So you have to spend time on the education, getting people on board, and making sure that they have the skills to recognize and manage the transition as well. Market expertise, all of those MPG group meetings that are very long. Somebody needs to sit through them and just make sure that you have access to the people that sit on those industries. ASISA is very active. They also have meetings with their members, and I think most people here should have a CISA representation. So please look towards all of these industry forums and educate yourselves. Communication, I mean, I feel like that should just be on every slide always because it's so hard to get right and so important. Start early, speak clearly, make sure that you're speaking to people upwards and downwards. Communication across all channels is hugely important. The reporting, the MI, that's very important when you start actively transitioning these things, because remember, you're not going to have Dibather one day, wake up the next morning and then have Zaronia. It's probably going to be some combination of the two for a very long time. So your reports and your MI and all of those things need to keep track of that transition. And then the last point is the timing, because as I've said, the whole market is doing this. It's not one organization. It's not just the insurers that are doing IFRS 17. It's every single bank, it's every insurer, it's every corporate in our entire financial market. And towards the end of the transition, they are all going to be rushing for the exits and wanting to get this done. And the last thing that you want to do is to rush together with everyone else to try and get this done. So that's my story. And I hope that I have gotten everyone excited over Jaiba transition. I don't know if there are questions from the audience, maybe.
Thanks, Cecile. I think you have been successful in at least getting me from, do I need to care about this thing, to, okay, there's something here.
Yes. So my
question is very grade one. Okay. For this one genuinely is. a floating rate note with 3 monthly coupons, how would that work now? How would that rate be set? Will it literally be the integration or interval of the 3 months of overnight rates up to the point when the coupon is paid? Mm-hmm. Will it be now only known in arrears, or how will it work?
So if you have a floating rate payment today, you're going to pay the rates at the end of the period. Okay, you're going to start observing Zaronia from today. Jaibar, easy. We know what it is. You take the notional, pay the rate at the end of the 3 months. Zaronia, you're going to start observing the rate today. Tomorrow, you're going to have two rates. You can work out your accrued interest because you only need the two rates, right? Next day you have three rates. And then, I have a very nice mathematical formula that shows you how it works. But you do a compound multiplication of all of those rates, and you create some factor over the period. -1 divide by the period, and you get your average rate for the period, and that's what you will use. And practically for the floating rate notes, they do that look-back shift, so they move it back a few days. So there's a couple of day lags, just because you cannot make the payment today if you only knew the final rate the last night.
Hi. The previous speaker said we could ask silly questions, so I'm about to ask one. Why are we moving from Jaiba to Zaronia in the first place? What was the intention?
So, I mean, originally, and I don't know, sorry, that light is really bad in my eyes, so I'm sorry, I'm not looking at you, I'm going to look at these guys, because otherwise I need shades. So previously what happened in the overseas with the LIBOR rates, they also had the process where banks would submit certain rates, and there was a huge scandal, because it actually came out, I think it was 2012, that they were colluding on the rates, and they were submitting rates that weren't accurately reflective of their funding. So the regulators and the central banks of the world went away and they said, we can't have this. We need to have a rate that adheres to certain principles. And IOSCO actually outlined what those principles are. And they looked for things like transparency, and it needs to be anchored in a liquid market and all of those things. And many jurisdictions across the world have moved over. The US, they moved over finally, I think, last year, June. The UK has moved over. Singapore, many, many, many organizations. I think Israel and Mexico is currently moving their rates over. So it is a global theme. Everybody that used these IBOR-type polled rates, not everybody. Most of the people that use the IBOR-type polled rates are busy transitioning to a more robust rate that's pinned in transactions. At the moment, Jaibar, 5 banks go onto screen, they put up rates. It can be interpreted as being somewhat dubious. Not that I'm making accusations or anything. Look, I mean, a lot of people have also said, we haven't had a scandal in South Africa, why do we need to do this? But you want to align with the market. You want to align with what is regulatory best practice. And you don't want to wait for a scandal to happen. I mean, that would just be the worst situation in the world. We have enough trouble with grey listing as it is. So that's why.
So still we've got two online questions. Mm-hmm. The first one is from Andrew McNulty. Will the SOAR provide guidance or recommendations on the transition spread adjustment? If this is vague and clear, impact on market stability?
So that refers to those fallback spreads that I've spoken about. The SARB is definitely going to provide guidance on that. They are starting a working group with people that are looking into it, and they will publish, they will be very transparent around how they go about it and the methodology that they use. They want people to adopt the spreads. They want people to accept it. They are not... they're not looking to create spreads that the market does not accept. So they're wanting to be very clear and transparent with that process. The reason why it hasn't happened yet is because they're only starting the working groups right now. Sorry, I'm standing in front of you.
And one more question, anonymous attendee. On your example of the coupon payment, you didn't talk about liquidity and credit risk, which, if I understand correctly, isn't included in the overnight Zeronia rate. How would this be allowed for, or is there something very obvious that I'm missing?
Sorry, just say that again.
So basically, there's no allowance for liquidity and credit risk in the Zeronia. So they say, how would this be allowed for, or is there something very obvious that I'm missing? So I think the point is the Zeronia doesn't allow for liquidity and credit spread, and it's not just risk-free.
It doesn't, because it's an overnight rate, and it's hugely liquid. So that is the point, is that Zeronia does not have the credit spread and the liquidity spread embedded in it. And I think I have a picture there somewhere that shows it there on the right. That's your JIBOR, same concept. You have the risk-free overnight rate, and then on top of that, you add your liquidity and your credit spread. And that's those are the spread adjustments. Okay. All right.
So we would just like to thank you, Cecile, for making the time and to inform us as a profession. And we just have something small as a token of our appreciation.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.